You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truthful Out Radio. Today's date is Friday, 20th of July, 2018. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. Of course, as it's Friday night and it's Truthful Out Radio, we have the producer of Adolf Hitler, the greatest story never told, Communism by the Back Door, and the Freemasonic victors of World War II, gracing us with his presence tonight, Mr. Dennis Wise. Dennis, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, Sven, since Croatia won the World Cup.
Hey, I bet you are. And what a contrast between them and France.
I don't need people to tell me who's the best side.
Yeah. Well, what a contrast between what happened afterwards, Dennis. What happened afterwards?
Yeah, the riots in France. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Incredible, isn't it? Yeah. Well, carry on.
You've got them saying what a multicultural triumph this is, and this is really going to bring France together, and this just shows all the nasty racists that they don't know what they're talking about. And France just descends into chaos and looting, and Croatia, I mean, they're the real winners. They've come out of it without a destroyed capital city, without young girls being raped, shops robbed, and, you know, rioting and looting. They missed all of that. They had just normal celebrations.
Yeah, too white, though, according to some French reports.
Well, it is a shame they didn't actually win the World Cup, to be honest.
They did. In my eyes, they won it. They did. You know, like that Jew said, like, you know, in my imagination.
It was really in your mind. Well, we've got, I think we've got some great subject that you've picked for tonight, Dennis. You've just put up a new video, Communism, Fascism and National Socialism, which identifies the differences between all of them. And I think this is really something that a lot of people don't really get, especially the civic nationalists. They're always saying Antifa, they're the real fascists. And, you know, that really just shows that they don't fully understand what they're talking about, because there are quite important differences between all of them, and interesting differences as well, I think. Was that your motive for putting this one up?
Well, yeah, that, and when I did Communism by the Back Door, I used to get one or two left-wingers accusing me that I didn't know what communism was, because they thought it was this wonderful workers' paradise, not realising that they'd been fooled and capitalists always funded communism.
Well, there's essential differences in the actual ideology itself as well, which is important. Not just the execution of it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But we've got some comments that we can begin with just before we start getting into these three subjects. The first one comes from Charles Christensen, and he says, "Who is this speaking? I'd like to find the whole interview." And this is referring to this interview that you've put up.
Well, it says right at the beginning of the video, I can't remember now, but they're both doctors or professors. Very, you know, they've got all the credentials.
Where did you find it then?
I had it for about, I bet I must have had it for about 2 years. Found it on YouTube. It's the old channel that Ernst Nundl used to use when he was doing them wonderful broadcasts, 80s, 90s. And I just kept it to one side because, you know, I thought one day she's going to come in.
Well, I thought I recognised the interviewer's voice. I can't quite place who it was. I missed seeing the bit at the beginning where I actually identified who it was. I mainly listened to stuff rather than watching it. The other question from They Are Lying to You, he says, Dennis, what year was this original interview?
Well, again, I'd be guessing, but, you know, I'm saying late 80s, early 90s, when Ernst Nundl were doing that wonderful work of his.
I'm trying to recall the name of his series. It escapes me for now.
I've got the video running in silence, so it should come up shortly.
Well, it might be an idea to stop that, because that might interfere with the connection, Dennis.
Well, this isn't on the browser. This is my desktop. Dr. Herbert Poinsett is doing the interviewing. I said he was a doctor, didn't I?
And, I've heard his name.
I suppose shortly he will tell me who the other guy is. Or Eric Thompson.
I've heard of Dr. Poinsett. Yeah, I've heard of Dr. Poinsett. Well, it's,
yeah.
I don't agree completely with everything that's said, but I can see where he's got the idea from that he's saying what he's saying, and it doesn't really detract from it. I mean, there's a comment that we've got, which we'll address later on, where somebody points out that there are three bits that aren't quite right, but they aren't quite right, but they are right, if you know what I mean. And we'll get into that later. Yeah.
He's actually a historical analyst. I got that wrong. Not a doctor, Fresnel. But a historian.
Doctor of history, I guess.
Like me.
The Nazi doctor, Dr. Wise.
That's the one.
Okay, let's move into the first one. We'll do it in a different way round, I think. If we go communism, fascism, National Socialism, I think we're tackling them in that order. And the first bit that it really tells you about communism, that communism is internationalist, and it believes that race is a social construct. It doesn't believe that there are differences between the races, and it sees all human beings as a blank slate at birth, which is really a falsehood. I mean, biology tells us that that's false, because we all have different IQs. You cannot just program, it doesn't matter what human being is, you cannot just program them into being something that they're not capable of being. I mean, we've got IQs that range from 65 with the pygmies to, and that's the average, to about 105, I think it is, with the Asians, with an average. And obviously the brainiest whites are 120, 140 IQ. So, you know, double the intelligence quotient that these pygmies have. So it's quite clear that we're not a blank slate at birth. So that premise that all human beings are the same, which just about everything from communism springs from, is false. If you have a false premise, the end result of what you're saying is going to be a failure. And that is so important to get these premises right, and not just believe in things because you like the sound of them. You know, the communists, obviously, they like the sound that all human beings are the same at birth. So we'll just pick that. And it's the same with people that, well, I like the sound of the Old Testament being written by Jews because I don't like the Old Testament and I don't like the church. So I'll take that as being the truth. And again, it's a false premise that leads to false solutions, I would suggest. You got anything you'd like to say about this race as a social construct, internationalism in communism, Dennis?
Well, you're right that it's an impossibility to say everybody's equal. Not just in intelligence, but people have different skills as well. Some are more adapted in woodwork, which I was always useless at. As we saw in the World Cup, some football, some nations are natural athletes more than others. So it's just I don't know where they get it from. In fact, I think they just made it up to, in all fooling of everybody. You know, it's nice to know. Some people would think it were nice to know that everybody's equal, but some are more equal than others, as you know.
Yeah, they just think it sounds nice. You got a good point there about them actually swapping the trades around, because they did have people that were carpenters that were told, right, you're a plumber now. Or people that were doctors that were told, no, you're a plasterer.
That would have been a nightmare with me.
Yeah, well, this is actually what went on. I remember reading it. I was in Prague. And the communist museum that they've got there, and it had examples of that, where you'd had these highly educated people that were told, right, you're doing building work now. And these people that were trained, like say you were trained as an electrician and you'd been told, right, now you've got to go and work digging up roads. On their time off, that was the black market. And they would go out and do their, electrical work, and they'd have to do it on the quiet. If they got caught doing it, they'd be sent off to the gulag. Absolutely mental. Doomed from the start, really. Just a way to destroy countries, which I think shows
it's control as well, isn't it? I think it's the, rather than democracy, where they're hidden behind the curtain and everybody goes out to vote, with communism, they don't even bother with the voting, do they?
It also shows you this drive that the Jews have to just destroy things. Like a parasite will destroy its host. I mean, they could have made, they could have really made something out of Russia. Lots of raw materials there, but they didn't. They just ran it into the ground and killed lots of people. It's I think it reflects Jewish mentality, communism. But the next part of it, I mean, and this quite surprised me. The guy being interviewed, he says communism is a form of conservatism. It's actually conservatism because what they're trying to do is return to nature. And they think that if they have no social institutions, no government, no family, no work, then we'll be returning back to this angelic heavenly state which mankind was in originally, going back to nature. And this ties in with the noble savage and the idea that these savages that are out there in the third world, they don't have any crime, they don't have any problems, and sure. You know, all the modern world has confused us. And we need to get back to being like that. So it's a very strange form of conservatism. And again, that's a lie as well, that there's a noble savage. I mean, their lives are brutal. There was a woman that faked a load of research about one of these primitive tribes, saying that they led this idyllic life. And it was actually found out that all her work had been faked. And a lot of the anthropology degree, the people that do these degrees in anthropology, is based on her work. And that was in the 20s, 30s, I think she did this. I forget her name, but people still cite her today. And that ties into it. And again, it's a lie.
Well, again, I come to this equal status thing. Imagine if you've got a couple of cannibals, one's 6 foot six and the other one's 4 foot five, and they've had a meal, but the 6 foot six guy is still going to be hungry because he's got a lot more to fill. So the next time they kill a pig, you know, the 4 foot five guy got a problem. Capiche?
Well, yeah, we don't have this equality. And if you do have no laws, if you do have anarchy, then it just becomes the biggest, baddest, meanest guy takes control. These anarchists that say, well, we don't want any state whatsoever. You get rid of the state, you've got nobody to protect you. And, you know, even though a lot of our laws are misused and the police are misused, it's still better than having none at all. Because then you would have the law of the jungle and you just have the meanest, nastiest person with the most force would just come in and take over.
Which is what happened, by the way, in the concentration camps, because at one point all the food was going to the meanest, toughest communists and the rest has to just hope for scraps.
That's what happens. If you have no rewards, you have no incentive to work. Incentive. I mean, everybody paid the same rate. There's no incentive to excel or to improve. You're just going to do just enough to get by. In fact, you know, if you did actually do better, then you were going to be punished. You'd be sent to the gulag because you'd be more mean. You're more intelligent.
That's an upside down world, isn't it?
It was actually in I think it was in Cambodia. I mean, the form of communism that they had there. They literally killed all the university professors, all the university students, everyone.
Well, they always do, don't they? Intelligent. They always do that.
In Poland, they
killed all the intelligentsia.
Yeah, they at one point they killed everyone with glasses because spectacles were seen as a sign of intelligence.
They killed them because they were good looking, in some cases, believe it or not.
Yeah, I can believe that. If you're trying to make everybody equal, you see, you can't raise people up. All you can do is cut people down. You can't make people more intelligent. All you can do is make them more stupid.
Or drag them down. You can't make them more attractive. You know, they're ugly like, but that's why they used to get really attractive ones.
And because there is with communism, it's not based on nation. It's not based on shared inheritance. It's supposed to be based on the workers of the world uniting together. But there was no unity between the workers of France and the workers of Africa, or the workers of Germany and the workers of China, because they're not actually related to them. So the world revolution never actually took off. It never happened.
Well, the workers' revolution didn't, but I do believe that. The military one has.
Well, because it didn't take off, that's why they came out with cultural Marxism. And they thought, well, what we'll have to do is we'll have to attack all the institutions.
We'll brainwash everybody. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll attack all the institutions and we'll use minorities as our way to do this. We'll elevate the minorities and say that they've been persecuted all this time. And that's what we'll use to take down the West. because they couldn't get the workers of the world to do it. Yeah. You know, they pretty much succeeded with it. And as you say, you know, a large part of this was the equalitarian ideal, the egalitarian ideal of making everybody equal. And but as I say, you cannot make excellence out of mediocrity.
Well, can I just say that the people's vision of equal is different to what the reality is, because people think everybody will be on a good wage, you know, there'll be no need to ask for a pay rise and no need to, you know, we'll all have enough money for food or whatever. But you can be equal when you're poor, which is what most people were.
You can be equal under the law. That's what you need, to be equal under the law. Everybody needs to be equal under the law, otherwise things are unjust. But what they wanted was equality of outcome, which is, again, what we have today. That's what they really mean by equality, is we want equality out of outcome, whether you're any good at your job or not. You know, if you're a Negro and you can't actually make the grade to get into university, in order to make that the same as white people, they will let the Negro into the university without such good grades, and he won't actually have to pass the exams like white people. It's not just Negroes; they do it with women as well.
Jews, haven't they?
Yeah, well, they've done it. They've done it with all different ethnic minorities. That's just this drive for equality. What we should have is just equal under the law. Which is what we always had. And now what they've done is they've made everybody unequal under the law by trying to produce these equal outcomes for everyone. I mean, their excuse for saying no whites apply for this job is that they are redressing the fact that not so many blacks get these top jobs. But all that means is that you're just discriminating against white people. So that's all it's ended up doing. Whereas if you were all equal, it would be, you know, you'd only get the job on merit. Whoever was the best suited for the job would get the job, not because
of that's what it should be. But I don't think they included whites in this agenda as it was.
Well, the racial thing, you know, that sort of evolved over time as well, didn't it? You know, communism didn't start out really racial. That really started getting pushed after the war.
Depends when you're. I mean, it went on after World War One, didn't it?
Yeah, but when they started going into Africa and stirring the Africans up, that was really sort of after World War Two. And I think the word racist that came about in about the '30s, I think.
Possibly. I know Kalergi were writing about it, weren't he, in the early 20s.
Did he use the word racist? Racialist?
Well, I mean, if you're going to mix Europe into a Negroid.
Ah, yes, that way. Yeah.
Nations, then, you know, that's the racist to me.
Yeah, yeah, he was encouraging that. Well, we also have with communism the population removal. So they remove a population from one area and transplant them into another area.
Yeah, they've done that a lot, you know. Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I was looking into the Trail of Tears, you know, that when they moved to Cheyenne, and I'm pretty sure Freemasons were behind that one as well.
I'm not sure which one you're talking about. I know they moved Russians into Latvia, and they've still got a problem with a large population of Russians that are now in Latvia. The same with Finland. And if you look at the Russians in Crimea, I mean, I'm not saying this is right or wrong, but Crimea is 98% Russian, and they all voted to join Russia. But Crimea was part of Ukraine at the time. I know it had been given to them 50 years previous. It was Russia before that, but it still shows you that, you know, if you've got a majority population somewhere, they are going to take the place over. And yet, according to the communists, because everybody's equal, we can just move this population there and move that population here and everything will be fine. They're all encouraged to interbreed. Blacks are expected to be able to behave like whites. Whites are encouraged to behave like blacks. And as you say, the ultimate goal is the same as the Kalergi plan. Everybody coffee-coloured and one world government over the top, with nobody being able to actually have any say in who that is or who is representing them, because it shouldn't matter who's representing you because we're all equal. This is what's behind the UN, isn't it? You know, they say, well, we can have this.
There's a few things behind that place, yeah.
Well, they say it doesn't matter if you've got a Chinese guy running it. Everybody's all the same. So the Chinese guy's got your best interests at heart. This is what Donald Trump is challenging. He's saying they don't have America's best interests at heart. Only an American will have America's best interests at heart. And that's shocked the whole world that he wants what's best for America. Because we're all supposed to think that all these other countries are doing what's best for everybody else. And it's selfish to do what's best for your country. And that's this communism, communist idea.
Yeah, I think people haven't realised, or a lot of people haven't realised, that the UN is built on the Communist Manifesto. It includes the Lucis Trust as well. They have a big say in it, the occultists, both offices in London and in New York. And people don't really seem to realise just what the UN is. They think it's a... You know, I mean, the army is a peacekeeping force, which it isn't. And I proved that in Communism by the Back Door. It's a shock to a lot of people, because when I have an argument on YouTube and say, look, the UN's communist, go and Google it, they'll rather Google it, they'll abuse me.
Well, UNESCO came out of Moscow, didn't it? UNESCO.
Well, that's another one. This one behind the teaching of young children, you know, anal sex and all this kind of carry on at a young age. That's all UNESCO.
Rights of the child, which is, you know, it's not the right of child not to be killed in their wombs. That's apparently the rights of a child to have sex with an adult when children can't give consent to have sex. So they're actually being raped. But that's what they mean by rights of a child. Go on.
There was an instance in Liverpool, maybe six, seven weeks ago, where... The parents of a child had got enough money to take him because, you know, they were saying in London that they can't do anything for him. But they said, look, we've raised enough money, we want to take him to, I think it were Italy they wanted to take him to, where these doctors felt that, you know, they could well have a go at him. And I said to the wife at the time, they've got no chance of going to all the high courts, everything, you know, rights of European Union rights, whatever. I said, they've got no chance of, well, what do you mean? Because it's not their child. When you sign that birth certificate over, you're literally handing your child over to the state. And, you know, this is why they can just come in and take them, no qualms. I mean, they don't do it with everybody. You know, that's why people don't realise the situation. But they had no chance going to that court because it wasn't their child. And if the state, whoever's representing the state, said no, the judge said no.
We were better off being subjects than citizens, I think.
Yeah, we're nothing really.
Well, we've got a few comments about this. And this is from New World Orders. He says, I agree with a lot of what this dude said, but he also said that communism is anarchy. Communism is totalitarian and wasteful of government resources, whereas anarchy, as far as I know, is basically unrealistically radical libertarianism. That is an almost total absence of governance. Well, I think communism was promising it to be no laws and everyone can do what they want. And in the early days, especially the, you know, the test communist republic they had in Germany, they were saying, well, brothers can marry their sisters. The age of consent can be 14. Everybody can have sex, no more family. And the idea was there was going to be no more laws. But of course, you can't actually have that, and you have to, it has to get more and more repressive to stamp out dissent. And then you get the totalitarian state that communism actually began, because it requires an extremely repressive police state to stamp out all the dissent against this, because everybody's supposed to be thinking in one way, but they don't, because they're all individuals and they all want this and they all want that. So it sort of promises there's not going to be that many laws, and it's going to be as close to anarchy as we can get without, you know, the state intruding. And because of that, it actually becomes the most intrusive state of all. And you can look at it today, can't you, really? You see that.
I think what it is, Goebbels mentioned it as well, and that's another speech we had last week. Goebbels mentioned anarchy as well. And if you ever watch an Antifa YouTube video and there's any trouble, you'll see the communists shout, get the anarchists, because they're kind of like the avant-garde when there's problems. And these anarchists all appear with a mask on and start to kick off. So they're very much in league with each other.
And they're a part of it, aren't they? I mean, the anarchists, the violence, the terrorism, the smash everything. And then after that, communism is what takes over.
Just cleans the mess up, yeah.
So the two work together, and communism, anarchism. So that's the bit where anarchism fits in with it. Well, the next one is fascism. And that's, you know, although we mention it quite a lot, it's not that often that we've actually discussed what it is and how it differs from National Socialism. It does differ from National Socialism, but as the world has moved on from the time of there just being, you know, Benito Mussolini's fascism and Adolf Hitler's National Socialism, you can see now that National Socialism is really a form of fascism, like a brand of fascism. Like sure. you've got the automobile and you've got the brands of BMWs, Rolls-Royce or whatever. National Socialism is the Rolls-Royce of fascism. That's the ultimate one.
It's got a bad reputation since World War II. Of course, Jews have twisted it, really. So more or less anybody who's a pain in the ass and politically is a fascist. And, of course, you've got corporate fascism, red fascism. You know, as long as they get the word fascism in, Alex Jones is happy.
Well, we'll see that actually there's quite a few things in fascism that we do actually have today that people are quite happy with. And also other things that have been mischaracterized. Well, Mussolini was a nationalist, but he was a civic nationalist. He wasn't an ethno-nationalist.
He used to be a socialist, didn't he? Yeah,
he used to be a socialist, but he saw that it failed in World War One because he realized that people don't identify as a class, but they were identifying as Italians, not as international workers of the world. So that was his idea, was that they would come together as a country, come together as Italy, not necessarily racial Italians, but just as Italy, the country, which actually meant that later on, they were even allowing Ethiopians to call themselves Italian. This is what I mean by that there were some mistakes that they actually made. But it's the same idea that he had there that we actually have today, which is this attempt to completely bypass ethnicity and get foreigners to identify as British. And it's this same idea. That's what Mussolini had. People that live in Italy can call themselves Italian. They can be part of fascism. They can be part of the state. And it didn't matter what the ethnicity was. And that is exactly the same today. So, you know, this idea that race doesn't matter and, you know, is just because somebody set foot on the British soil, then they can call themselves a British citizen. I mean, there's not really any difference between what Mussolini was doing. So, you know, I think that played into the reasons why, you know, there were certain failures with him. The other ideas that he had were pretty good. And these failures of socialism, I mean, they're running things now. As we said, that is the EU. That is where communism ended up, pretty much. And this internationalism,
always intended. Yeah,
internationalism, class solidarity. You know that doesn't work. Multiculturalism and diversity. It just falls down at every hurdle. You know, just think of the language barriers. Think of the cultural differences. Think of the problems you have just trying to order your food in a foreign restaurant, and then think how much more difficult that's going to be when you've got a foreign doctor. You know, something that's really important, not just getting your food right. So, you know, he got that bit right, that you needed to have the right language. But the idea that all these workers were just going to get together and suddenly, you know, form a revolution, a communist revolution, was just false. And the fascist solution was to bring all the citizens' interest groups together that previously had been competing with one another. So he got the nobility together, he got the churches together, got the landowners, the unemployed, all these groups he got together, basically almost the idea of sitting around a table and working out exactly what needed to be done. So everyone that had something to say would have something to say, and they would work out between them how they could coexist within Italy. Unlike today, where they all sit around the UN, all these different countries trying to work out how they can coexist, that's not going to work. You can only do that in a limited state with a nation. And even then, it has to be ethnic, really, not just based on citizenship. And the problems they had were things like strikes, low pay, unrest, and they were divided against themselves. And the solution they came up with was to have guilds instead of trade unions. to have corporations, which is where this idea comes from, that multinational corporations are fascist, which they're not. They're not fascist. That's completely different. The corporation was very different back then. And corporatism, which is where it came from, I've got a quote here. Corporatism is the organization of a society by corporate groups and agricultural, labor, military, or scientific syndicates and guilds on the basis of their common interests. In 1881, Pope Leo XIII commissioned theologians and social thinkers to study corporatism and provide a definition for it. In 1884 in Freiburg, the commission declared that corporatism was a system of social organization that has at its base the grouping of men according to the community of their natural interests and social functions, and as true and proper organs of the state, they direct and coordinate labor and capital in matters of common interest. So it was the Pope that actually came up with the idea of corporatism. Dennis, do you want to make a comment on the Pope before I bring in a quote from the Doctrine of Fascism?
Yeah, well, there's a couple of things I'd just like to slip in there as well on the Pope. I've said it for a long time, and it seems that a bishop now has come out and admitted that all the top brass of the Vatican now is under the payroll of Soros, the Jew, and the agenda for the New World Order. And this is the reason why the Pope, which I don't really call the Pope, goes along with all the homosexuality and the atheists go to heaven and all this kind of carry on, because, as I said not too long ago, it is now the Church of Lucifer, and there's 1 billion members, and a lot of them, most of them, don't even realise. They look at Francis and think, what a wonderful guy, he's changing things for the better, but really he's changing things when he shouldn't be changing things at all. But what I'd just like to say about what really puzzles people, I mean, I had a conversation with, on YouTube with a woman only briefly. She kind of shook her head and just went away, which I knew she would. And we got on about Margaret Thatcher. Margaret Thatcher is no different to every other prime minister. They all knew the agenda from Ted Heath going into taking us into the EU, Winston Churchill, Margaret Thatcher. They all knew the EU was communist and where Britain was heading. Now, where this differs now with... when people say, oh, the communism is for the workers, when the miners went on strike, she smashed them. You know, this is a communism, but it's not communism as we know it. You know, they'll smash the workers. They had them on strike for at least 12 months. And people were looking at her as a fascist, where all the time she's a communist, but she's been given orders from Rothschild and she followed through with everything Rothschild's told her. I mean, she got this mega funeral at the end. She got these jewels from this Rothschild's firm down in South Africa. So she was certainly on board with everything. And yet she used to go into Europe and she used to say, we want this, we want that, and battling Maggie, all the papers. And she'd come back over into England and everybody would assume that she was kind of like a real right-wing terror. But really, she was a communist, but as a good act. But when people got out of line and she got the orders to kill them miners, you know, the wages, kill them villages, she did it.
Well, that's the problem that we have, isn't it? People that are communists get called fascists, especially by the alt-right.
Exactly. Prime example.
And that is a good example. And you can tell that the actual doctrine of fascism was nothing like communism. Again, this is actually taken from the doctrine of fascism. When brought within the orbit of the state, fascism recognises the real needs which gave rise to socialism and trade unions, giving them due weight in the guild or cooperative system in which divergent interests are coordinated and harmonised in the unity of the state. So instead of competing against one another, they're working together, they're cooperating together, and they are competing against the same... the same trades, the equivalents of the corporations in other countries, but within the country they're working together. The state is not simply a mechanism which limits the sphere of the supposed liberties of the individual. Neither has the fascist conception of authority anything in common with that of a police-ridden state. I mean, that's far from what you're told. You know, we're told fascism, that's a police state. Well, no, it's nothing to do with a police state. Far from crushing the individual, the fascist state multiplies his energies, just as in a regiment, a soldier is not diminished, but multiplied by the number of his fellow soldiers. It's basically the harmonizing of previously competing power blocks, and that's where you get the symbol of the fascies from. So you get the bundle of sticks together that together forms a much solid, stronger form than just one stick on its own, so strong that you can put an axe head in it and then you can chop wood with it. But that's basically by the strength of putting all these weak sticks together will produce that strength. That's the origin of the symbol. And much of the corporatist influence upon Italian fascism was partly due to the fascist attempts to gain endorsement by the Roman Catholic Church. And the church itself sponsored corporatism. Fascists in non-Catholic countries also supported Italian fascist corporatism, including Oswald Mosley of the British Union of Fascists, who commended corporatism and said that, quote, it means a nation organized as the human body, with each organ performing its individual function, but working in harmony with the whole, close quote. Mosley also considered corporatism as an attack on laissez-faire economics and international finance. And when you look at that quote there about it being the human body with each organ forming its individual function, that's exactly the same as St. Paul's description of how Christianity is supposed to work, but with Christ at the head. So fascism is Christianity, so of course the church were involved in it.
Exactly. Can I just add, by the way, I forgot to mention that what they did, I mean, you know yourself, today in Britain, the unions are really nothing at all. There's no real strength in unions like they used to be. So what they did, they destroyed the unions and they took power from the unions and drove down the wages, sold all the assets off, probably, you know, to Rothschilds at a rock bottom price. North Sea oil vanished. And today we have workers, more or less, the majority is working at Tesco's for a feeble wage. And, you know, if you don't like it, you leave, there's another person ready to jump in because jobs are scarce. So that's really what this country has done to drive wages down, to bring in the immigrants, because that always takes the wages down. And so the working is down to a level where we will only just survive.
You also got the antagonism between the workers and the bosses, and you got the trade unions, yeah, which want to go on strike, and they're working against the interests, really. They're just trying to get as much as they possibly can out of the boss. The boss is trying to get as much as he possibly can out of the worker. And with fascism, you know, they were working together. And they were working together with other companies as well, in these corporations, in these guilds, trying to advance what was best for the country. And it was what was best for the nation. That's what needed to be done. And that's what you were working for. So the bosses that's were working for the good of all.
Yeah.
You know, that yes, was the essential the difference. You know, these trade unions is, you know, it's a Jewish idea, isn't it? They'll tell the workers that they're not being paid enough and they should strike, and they'll rile them up, and then they'll go to the bosses and they'll say, your workers aren't working hard enough, you should import other workers from another country. And they'll whisper a different words into the different ear, whether they're rich or poor, just to stir things up and get them to cancel out one another. And while that's going on, and while the workers and the bosses are fighting amongst themselves, the Jews are there loaning out the money and getting to the top of the
bankers pile. Bankers are crashing, and then we have to pay for it.
Yeah. Well, the main difference, as I say, I think really why fascism failed is because it was based on civic nationalism, because the nation was defined by citizenship. And for example, a black Ethiopian could join the Italian forces and wear an Italian uniform if they supported the interests of the Italian state. And I think that's a possible reason for Italy's continual failures during World War II. I mean, I've just been reading a summary of the war, and every time Italy is mentioned, it's a complete failure. And the Germans had to go in and sort
like the
things
World
out.
Cup campaign.
Yeah.
First time Italy haven't qualified, suddenly you've got a country full of immigrants.
And we've got one more comment that we can have here before we move on to National Socialism. And this comes from Keith Knight. And he says, all forms of statism violate the non-aggression principle and are therefore immoral. Great historical work overall on this channel. Now, I don't know if he's trolling there, but it's non-aggression principle. How are you going to enforce that if you're not without aggression? You can't. Somebody has to monopolize the aggression, and that has to be under the law. We have to have somebody enforcing the law. If we don't, then, as we were saying about the anarchy, you'll just end up with gangs running things, and you'll end up with, you know, the worst people monopolizing aggression. So, you know, that's the whole point of the state, is that it monopolizes aggression, but it should be for the good of the nations. It should be to keep law and order and to ensure that there is justice. That's the reason why it should be used, and that's the reason for the state. But the way it's come out today, yeah, is the state appears to be there just to force us to make money for it.
Well, the problem with, like we said, for Churchill, for instance, with the Welshman, is he brought out the army. Sent the army down into the valleys, which is why they hate him, because the one or two were killed down there and unarmed. So, you know, this isn't, you know, there should be a proper name for this, rule that we're under. It isn't simply communism, you know, it's more.
It's not fascism. It's certainly not fascism, which is what people say it is. Because they have no respect for the members of the nation. I mean, for Churchill to go there shooting the miners, if the ethnic nation was the highest ideal, then he wouldn't be going there to shoot them, because he'd be thinking, well, that's my family there. You know, that's exactly. My brothers down the mine. Why should I be wanting to shoot them? I should be wanting to hear what the issue is, and I should trust them not to be, you know, trying to get whatever they can out of me, because they want the best for the nation, the same as I want the best for the nation. That's the essential difference. Yeah, that's why Churchill was evil.
It's about greed, isn't it, in this country, for personal greed, Jews and whoever, the elite.
This was the real difference with National Socialism, because, it, as you say, it was a form of fascism. You had this idea of the corporations and the guilds, but it was based on race. It was based on the combined biological inheritance. And by doing that, it was conforming with the natural order and actually conforming with the words itself. If you look at the word nationalist, that comes from the word natal, which means birth. So the word nationalist means who you came from, your mother and your mother's mother and your mother's mother's mother, birth, not where you were born, but birth, blood. And if you look at the other word, patriot, that comes from pater, which means father. So it means who your father was. So it's got nothing to do with where you were born. It's all to do with who you were born to. So National Socialism was conforming with the true idea of what a nation is, not this false idea of, you know, a bit of paper says what nation you belong to. Look in the mirror, that tells you what nation you belong to. Should be written in every, you know, every cell of your body.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, the next important thing is that socialism is not communism. Communism is just a form of socialism, because what you've got with National Socialism, you've got nationalism, which is ethno-nationalism, shared inheritance by blood, and then you've got socialism as well, the social side. And if we look up what socialism means, it's socialism is a range of economic and social systems characterized by social ownership and workers' self-management of the means of production, as well as the political theories and movements associated with them. Social ownership may refer to forms of public, collective, or cooperative ownership, or to citizen ownership of equity. There are many varieties of socialism, and there is no single definition encapsulating all of them, though social ownership is the common element shared by its various forms. In National Socialism, you had public ownership of utilities in railroads, important things like that. And then you had private ownership. Citizens own their own equity. So you had the best of both worlds, because you need to have things like electricity, water, the railways. They should all be owned by the government, and they should all be provided for us. We shouldn't be paying for them. That should just come from taxes. But at the same time, you need to still have private ownership of businesses, so that there's a reward for doing well and an incentive. And then these businesses need to be working together in these guilds so that they can produce the best products, and as these guilds compete against the best products that are produced elsewhere in the world. So you really had the best of both worlds with nationalism and socialism. And here's what Adolf Hitler has to say on it. And this is from a commenter, George Virek. No, actually, I don't have the commenter's name here. He says, here is an excerpt from an interview Adolf Hitler did in the 20s with George Virek, a friend of Nikolai Tesla. The Führer speaketh on the difference between Marxism and socialism. Socialism, he retorted, putting down his cup of tea pugnaciously, is the science of dealing with the common weal. Communism is not socialism. Marxism is not socialism. The Marxians have stolen the term and confused its meaning. I shall take socialism away from the socialists. Socialism is an ancient Aryan Germanic institution. Our German ancestors held certain lands in common. They cultivated the idea of the common weal. Marxism has no right to disguise itself as socialism. Socialism, unlike Marxism, does not repudiate private property. Unlike Marxism, it involves no negation of personality. And unlike Marxism, it is patriotic. We might have called ourselves the Liberal Party. We chose to call ourselves the National Socialists. We are not internationalists. Our socialism is national. We demand the fulfillment of the just claims of the productive classes by the state on the basis of race solidarity. To us, state and race are one. And that's, I think he puts it very well there. This idea of the common weal, the common land, I mean, the commonwealth, this idea, the commonwealth, that's the wealth of the nation. The land and what it can produce should be for the good of the nation, not for the good of, the rich guy sat at the top siphoning all the money off. You know, what we can produce, our combined intellect and productive powers should be used to raise the standard of living for the next generation. You know, it should be used collectively, not to just enrich individuals, which is the way that we're encouraged. So true nationalism is true socialism, I think, Dennis.
Well, I found out early in the early days of me actually looking into all this about World War II and everything, and it hit me straight away, more or less, that the Americans had just not got the gist of it. People like Bill Cooper and Eustace Mullins took that socialism as a form of communism, completely missed what, I mean, don't get me wrong, there was a lockdown in Europe with the press, with the Rothschilds and Reuters, and so the Americans only heard what they were meant to hear. But likewise, the same with Christianity. But on this socialist thing, Bill Cooper used to, I mean, he actually came out in one episode, I put it in one of the episodes, he actually came out and said, we must get rid of Freemasonry. Well, Hitler did get rid of Freemasonry, but he didn't know that. He just took that socialism as another form of Marxism.
Well, when you look back at the way our societies used to function, if you were rich, if you were a noble, then you were expected to help out the poor. Noblesse oblige. Well, that is socialism and it is nationalism, because you wouldn't be expected to do that for some foreigner, because there wouldn't even be any foreigners here. You would be expected to look after your own people. And that was that was one of the slogans of the National Socialists, public need before private greed. And that's the same thing. It's saying if you've got more than you need for yourself, then help out somebody else who is in need. And then when they've got enough, they will help out someone else. So again, it's a Christian idea. And the other side of it is it good for the nation? If it's not good for the nation, then no, we don't want it. Not does the individual want it, which is the way it is today. Does the individual want it? Well, if the individual wants it, then everybody else has to go along with it. Such as if the individual wants to be a homosexual, everyone else has to go along with it. But that's no good for the nation. So you need to be putting the nation first, not the individual. And the vessel that ensures that happens, that's the state. That's what the state should be doing. And that was the National Socialist idea, that the state is the vessel which protects the race, and the state itself is subordinate to the nation. And what we have today is the opposite way around. The nation is subordinate to the state, and we all have to work and pay all our taxes, and we don't get any say in anything, and we're all owned by the state. We're just numbers to them. And it doesn't matter if we're British, they can just import Africans because it's the same amount of numbers to them. They don't care because it's not based on on race.
Because they pay tax just like we do, and that's all they bother about.
They're not interested in quality; it's quantity that they're interested in. And then we get to where National Socialism really is the opposite of communism. Communism got rid of all the manager brains, all the intellectuals and the intelligent people, while National Socialism encouraged that, and the best brains were encouraged and rewarded, which is why they came out with so many fantastic ideas and all those patents that were stolen at the end of the war. Was it two stories house filled with patents? Or 20
it were a crime, put it that way.
20 tons, something like that. It's untold patents. You think rocket ships? Can I just say
it's the same with Christianity as well, because communism destroys Orthodox Christianity, Catholic Church, where it was subsidized by National Socialism. But I heard Michael Jones speaking to the day. He was asked about the relationship between the Vatican and Adolf Hitler. My name was mentioned in all this. And his opinion was that they were more pagan. And one of the camps, I think it was Buchenwald, I think, he said was this is where all the priests were kept, which I refute totally. You know, not the ones left wing priests, sure, but not every priest or, you know, quantity, just because they were Catholic.
No, it's because they were communists, because they were a threat to the state. If they were a threat to the state, then they were put in the camps. Exactly. They weren't put in there for being Catholic. It was just that there were a section of Catholics that were sympathetic to communism, the same as there were a section of Germans that were, you know, or a section
just
of
like
Protestants.
There
was a lot more today. They were a lot more supportive back then. But as well as encouraging the best brains, National Socialism was opposed to downbreeding, inequality. It didn't want to make everybody equal at all. It wanted to raise people up. It wanted the brainy people to be used to the absolute very best of their ability.
And that did improve everything. I mean, in a short space of time. I mean, you know, their inventions and everything. I mean, it looked like it practically happened overnight.
You're cutting up a little bit there, Dennis. They also had, because of this downbreeding, they didn't want the downbreeding. They brought in marriage laws, euthanasia and sterilization, which meant that the race was becoming improved. There was actual racial hygiene. If there were people that had congenital disease, they were mentally retarded, they had limbs missing, they were requiring masses of medication, then their carers could apply to have them euthanized. People that had diseases that they didn't want to pass on to their children, they were encouraged to get sterilized. So you basically had an improvement of the race. You had an upbreeding. So you had more people with higher IQs that were likely to be of more help to the nation. And you had less degenerate people that were breeding, because degenerate people breed at a much faster rate than productive people. There was a lot of research that was done at the time to actually show this. And the private enterprise, unlike in communism where that was banned, private enterprise was encouraged. So long as it wasn't harmful to the state, it was encouraged, because obviously things like pornography, that was banned. Degenerate plays and movies, that was banned. They didn't want people being encouraged to get divorced or to sleep around or all that sort of thing. So it was the opposite of communism in lots of ways. Where it was all based on race, Judaism was defined as a race. Now, in the video, he says that Judaism wasn't defined as a race, and that if Jews said that they were Christians, then they would be accepted. And I don't think that's quite right, because obviously the Nuremberg laws were based on race. Judaism was based on race, but there were Jews that identified with being German and fought for the National Socialists. So in special circumstances, they were allowed to be citizens, and the ones that were only quarter Jews and what have you, that they were allowed. And, you know, I think that was really wasn't a good idea. And we can see with DNA testing that, you know, if you are of mixed race, that will never go. There'll always be traces of it. So they couldn't actually outbreed the Jewishness from these people. So they were actually wrong in that. But they couldn't just say they were Christian and then be accepted as a German. That wasn't
right. It's a tough one, isn't it? Because they've been interbreeding for quite some time. So how do you define this is the thing, isn't it? You have to draw a line somewhere, I suppose. I watched a bit of a trailer the other day where they were saying that in Sicily, they were conquered by the Moors quite a fair while ago. And that black blood is still in the Sicilian blood, the race. It's still in there.
I think it's 10% black blood in Portugal. In the Portuguese, there's 10% black blood. But you can tell it's always there because otherwise, when they do these DNA tests, it would just say 100% such and such because it wouldn't be able to pick up on traces from, you know, 5, 6, 10 generations back. And they didn't know that then. We hadn't discovered DNA.
That's they right. Thought that, maybe things would be different today.
Yeah, they thought, well, if a white person breeds with someone who is a quarter Jewish, they'll only be an eighth Jewish, and the next time a white person breeds with them, then they'll be white again. And they weren't aware that actually that's not possible. We've got a couple of comments. Adrian Chetwin says that was very disappointing on many counts. National Socialists didn't pay tax. Jews are not a race. Crypto Jews got off scot-free if they pretended to be Christian. Well, I think we've covered the last two, but this National Socialists didn't pay tax one. I think they did pay tax, but the taxes went towards their welfare. The National Socialists were the first to come out with welfare, but up until then, it had always been charity by the church, and it was the church that was responsible for that. But the National Socialists actually put money towards the winter relief and the covering pensions and old people and all the rest of it from the tax.
Can I just interrupt just for a second, Sven, because I'll forget otherwise, but I heard today that there's an appeal on Fox television, right? I had it on YouTube. There's an appeal, please send money, send $40 to the Jews in the Soviet Union who are suffering. These are Holocaust sufferers who are so poor now that they can't eat, and they're asking for people to send donations of a minimum of $40.
And this is an advert today, is it?
This is an advert today on Fox News. So you tell me what's going on.
They've been doing that for the last 100 years, haven't they? I you were talking about life, so. One from years ago. I read something today. It was about, it was saying how many Jews there were in Germany. I think it says something like 4.5 million Jews in all the lands that Germany occupied during the war, and the claims for Holocaust reparations are 4.3 million. 4.3 million people have put in a claim for being a Holocaust survivor, and there were only 4.5 million in all the lands that were occupied.
Well, that's because that? I did this in the greater story. That's because if somebody lived in a country which was either under German control or Axis control, say like in 1935, and never even saw the war, but moved then to, say, Florida and sat on a beach for the next 10 years, never seen a bullet or hearing a bullet, they can claim Holocaust pension.
Well, that's just it, isn't it? These people survived. They weren't actually Holocausted. That's the point. I mean, how can you say there were 6 million Jews holocausted if 4.3 million put in for reparations and there was only 4.5 million in the first place? They'd have to still be alive to be putting in for the reparations, putting in for their compensation. Well, what really gets me is what about all the rest of the people that died in the war? Where's their compensation? The ones that weren't being medicated and fed and looked after in the camps. What about the poor Germans that we talked about? Those poor German children. What happened to them? You know, it's absolutely horrific. And you've got these Jews get compensation for it, and they weren't even fighting in the war. We were the ones fighting in the war.
Well, somebody actually said in a YouTube comment the other day, says, never mind just the Jews, the Germans haven't paid reparations for the homosexuals and the gypsies and everybody else. It just goes on and on, doesn't it, really?
I'm sure we will eventually see claims for that if something isn't done to stop it, Dennis. Anyway, that's it. We've reached the end of the podcast today. I think that was, we probably could have done three episodes on this, but it's good to do it all in one short one. Hopefully maybe some of the civic nationalists will hear it. So thank you very much for coming on, Dennis. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. Don't forget, we do require donations to keep the radio airing going, and you can find a Bitcoin wallet at the bottom of every article. We'll be back next Friday with more Truth Will Out Radio for you. And of course, we do hope you have a great weekend ahead of you. Thank you.